I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and today I'm joined by one of the UK's most prolific restaurateurs, Jason Atherton. Born in Worksop in Nottinghamshire, Jason's empire now spans the UK, the US, Middle East, and Asia, and encompasses 18 restaurants. With an even longer list of accolades, including 4 Michelin stars and TV appearances, Jason is one of the most successful and popular chefs in the industry. Hi, Jason, how are you?
Hi, how are you? You all right?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So you've been very active on social media with your live cook-alongs, and you're doing a lot for charity. Tell us about who you're supporting.
So me and my wife Vera, so we support JDRF, which is a charity for type 1 diabetes. We are principal patrons for Hospitality Action, so we've been doing stuff for HA. And then we've been working with a lot of suppliers to help feed the nurses at NHS, especially at the beginning. So we've been just doing as much as we can really from home.
Yeah, brilliant. And are you using the time to work on any new cookbooks?
No. We're not writing any books at the moment. We're just, it was my wife's idea, actually. So when we went into lockdown, she said, well, why don't we use your Instagram to teach people to cook some stuff at home now while we've got the time to just to inspire them, you know, give a little bit back to the regular guests who use the restaurants to show them how to prep fresh fish, to make bread, to do basics like pasta and bakes and cookies, even to basics of basic baking cookies. Because, you know, normally you don't have this type of time to share that information. So that's basically what we've been doing. It's been, you know, people have been loving it. So it's been great, really.
Yeah. I've been loving it too. It's absolutely brilliant. And you've got a new baby in the house. Congratulations. Are you having
Yes. Yeah, it's great. So, you know, she's 7 months old. So Athena is, you know, we normally, if it was not, we weren't in lockdown, I wouldn't have seen her crawl for the first time. I wouldn't have seen her, you know, grow up. Like I've said, she's completely amazing to watch grow up. So I've absolutely loved this time for that reason. And just bond with the family, really, which I don't really get that time. So it's great.
Brilliant. So you're the son of a hotelier. Would you say that's where your love for the hospitality industry came from?
Yeah, I mean, you know, being around food and being around hospitality from a young age certainly instills work ethic, instills, you know, what it takes to sort of feed people breakfast and dinner, and watch, you know, the hard work of everybody from the housekeepers down to the people who wash the pots and pans. So, yeah, so I've always been inspired by the hospitality industry from a young age.
Yeah. And apparently you ran away from home to London when you were just 16. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So 16, I was in a place where I really wanted to learn from London chefs, because London was the place to be back then. You know, thankfully now there's many great restaurants all around the UK, from Ireland to Scotland to Wales to the north of England to the south. So, you know, you've got a lot of great restaurants, whereas back then that wasn't the case. So, you know, it's a case of coming to London and learning, you know. So I just decided to get on the bus, you know, got to London, found a youth hostel and lived there for a year until I got on my feet, and the rest is history, really.
And at what point did you realize that you wanted to be a chef?
Quite a young age, probably like 13-14. I knew quite a young age that I love to cook, and you know, it was very anti what I was, I suppose, about back then. You know, tough little kid who used to play a lot of football and hang out with his mates and stuff. And then, you know, but I love to cook. I love the whole food side of it.
Yeah. And so you went to Boston College in Lincolnshire, and then you had a brief stint with the Army Catering Corps. How was that?
It was short. You know, I only started the basic training. So, you know, I was at St. Omer Barracks in Aldershot. I thought that if I was going to be a chef, then I'll do it in the army, so I could sort of learn to be a soldier as well as to learn to cook. But it wasn't quite for me. I was probably a bit too young for that type of discipline. I was 16, probably had too much to say for myself. And so I bailed out quite quick.
Well, you went on to work with some of the most respected and admired names in the industry. Pierre Coffman, Marco Pierre White. How was that experience?
It was great. You know, I mean, I was very lucky to work with some of the greatest chefs of that generation, you know, and still call them friends today, you know. And I think I'm very lucky and fortunate to have spent that time in those kitchens, but it was hard work. You know, you meet a lot of the chefs who are friends today. We worked in those kitchens together. And yeah, so, you know, it was, you know, they were the best of the generation, right? So it was great to spend that time in those kitchens and learn some of the most incredible things about food.
Yeah. You
know, that's what it was all about. It was only ever about food.
And you also spent some time with Ferran Adria at El Bulli. How was he to work with?
You know, we didn't communicate a lot because, you know, he only spoke Spanish, and in the kitchen he spoke mostly Catalan, but he was very fond of me because I worked very hard. We've been great friends ever since, you know, and I was the first non-Spanish speaking chef to be allowed in his kitchen. And I think that's because, you know, I was willing to work extra hard than other people were prepared to put in. And Ferran really liked that. And yeah, I mean, I learned some stuff there. What was just, you know, how to be creative, how to open your mind to young chefs, how to, you know, he was interested in what everyone he had to say about food, not just the senior chefs. He wanted to know if you'd worked in another three-star restaurant, if they were making lamb sauce, how did they make it and why did they make it that way? So he broke a process down and built it back up. So yeah, it was quite an incredible guy to watch work.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did you get the opportunity to work there?
I wrote to him. I wrote to him back then because you didn't have email or internet or anything like that, or even mobile phones, you know. So I wrote him a letter and he didn't answer. I wrote another one, he didn't answer. And then I just decided to go. So I got on a plane, I flew to Barcelona, I got the bus up to Rosas, and then hired a bike and biked up the mountain to the restaurant. And then I knocked on the door and he said no at first, and I begged to stay, and then he let me stay, and yeah, and the rest is history, really.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. That's quite persistent.
Yeah, but you know, I think if you show that to somebody, the willingness, then, you know, I think people are willing to give you a chance, right?
Yeah, amazing. So who gives you the most inspiration now from the industry?
I think I'm inspired by so many things, right? I'm inspired by movements. I'm inspired by, you know, the seasons. I'm inspired by certain chefs. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of Bjorn Franzen. I love his food, what he's doing at the moment. Me and my wife's eaten there a few times and we just love it. You know, I'm inspired by, you know, Daniel Hum, Thomas Keller, all those guys, you know, Cesar Ramirez in New York. I think his food's fantastic. So, you know, I look at movements around the world and see what they're doing, you know, and I just, you know, try and keep my food relevant without interfering with it too much.
In 2001, you joined Gordon Ramsay Group. You were there for 9 years before you started your own venture, The Social Company. What was the driving force behind starting out on your own?
You know what? I just got to a point where, you know, working for Gordon was amazing, but it got comfortable. You know, I was on an amazing salary. Gordon took amazing care of me. You know, my wonderful wife, we had a nice home. We had, you know, kids went to a nice school and life was comfortable. But I felt that I needed to push myself a little bit further and could I open a restaurant and could me and my wife do it for ourselves, right? You know, that was always the underlying factor. And so we set about opening Pollen Street Social. And that was it, really. That was nothing more than that. We just wanted to know that before it was all over for us, were we good enough to do it for ourselves?
Yeah. And did you have a co-investor or was it all done yourself?
We had a co-investor. Yeah. We sold 25% of the company to raise funds to be able to open up, because opening up a restaurant in the city centre of London is not cheap. Yeah, that's how we did it, you know. And then, you know, remortgaged the house, took a bank loan. So that's how we did it.
And you already had a great reputation as a chef. And then over 10 years, you built a fantastic portfolio of restaurants. Had you always wanted to be a restaurateur of this magnitude, or did that ambition come much later?
No. I think it came much later. We didn't, and I still don't have that attitude today. It's really just about it's just really about running our business. You know, me and my wife make all the decisions together. We talk every day about the business at some point, and you know, we talk about the way forward. We talk about if we're doing too much, if we're doing too little. We talk about, you know, every decision we make together as a strategic decision to see if it's good or bad for the business. And that's how we take it, really. We don't put ourselves in a ranking of saying, okay, we need to open up 5 restaurants so we can be the same as Pierre Gagné or anything like that. We don't ever think like that. We just think that, you know, we've got a nice little business, and let's try and keep it that way and add to it as and when we do. And, you know, not everything works. So, you know, some fall away and some stay for good. And it's, you know, our business is a precarious business. And I think COVID-19 proved that, right?
Yeah. And so you mentioned working with your wife. How is it working in a husband and wife dynamic?
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's good. I mean, you know, we never used to. It was predominantly me. You know, my wife wanted to come back to work after the second baby, after Jemima, and Ira was like, it took a big, you know, what was good about it was there was 2 of us spread around the company. So there was 2 of us keeping an eye on things, making sure things were right. And that's worth its weight in gold, you know?
Yeah,
and, you know, so my wife would predominantly take care of head office. You know, and there's 20, 25 people in the office, so a lot of people to control, right? Making sure that, you know, things are getting done properly, everyone's working hard, because nobody takes care of your business like family, right?
Absolutely. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about your overseas ventures. You open restaurants in Hong Kong, Singapore, Shanghai. What attracted you to do business in Asia?
It wasn't really, it's just opportunity. So, you know, when Shanghai came along, it was just, you know, an opportunity came along. It just happened to be there. It worked, and then that springs up another opportunity in Hong Kong, and that worked, and then it just goes on really like that. You know, same as New York, we didn't actively pursue New York. It got put on our table. New York's an exciting city, so of course we'd love to open a restaurant there. And you know, and that's basically how we do things. Really, we don't go searching for things. We just wait till they fall on our desk, and then we discuss them. And if it's worth doing, then we'll do it.
And how, so in normal times, how much of your time do you spend abroad?
Well, probably 30 to 35% of our time is probably spent abroad. 65% in London is probably about the right balance, I'd say.
Yeah. And so you opened a restaurant in Cebu in the Philippines as a dedication to your wife. That's a very romantic gesture. Tell us about that.
We go back. We go back there once a year for sure. Sometimes it can fall into twice, but we it's always a tough decision because it's like a second home. You know, do you want to open a restaurant? And but you know, Ira really wanted to see if our food could work in Cebu, so we decided that, you know, our best friends have got some beautiful properties over there, some towers and stuff. So they wanted to do a partnership with us. So we just thought, why not? Let's do it, you know. And it's quite a casual concept. It's been very, very successful. Which was, you know, quite incredible. But it's all about timing, right? So the Philippine economy over the last sort of 3-4 years has started to really boom. It's one of the boom economies in Asia. So we hit it at the right time. So the middle class was starting to expand. And so we made sure our price points were affordable. And it wasn't just an elite restaurant with white tablecloths. It's quite casual. It's tapas style. People can afford it. It's great cocktails. And, you know, and yeah, thankfully, touch wood, it's been a success. And hopefully post COVID-19, it will continue that way.
Yeah. And there's several British chefs like yourself that have restaurants in Dubai, and there seems to be a real demand for high-end Western cuisine there. Is it the locals or tourism that generates that kind of high demand?
I think, you know, in the Middle East in general, the big travellers, so you know, the local population love to travel, you know, around Europe, London, Paris, New York, Mediterranean. So, you know, they go to wonderful restaurants and, you know, they seem to want those brands back in their own town. So, you know, when they're building hotels and going to partnership with people like Four Seasons and Intercontinentals and Marriott's and stuff, then, you know, they approach people like us then to go and put restaurants in there, what they love from the cities, what they visit. And that's pretty much how it works. And it just tends to be that Dubai has a huge population of named chefs. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of them do very well. So, yeah, I mean, we've been there for 6 years now.
So your first restaurant in London, Pollen Street Social, it opened in 2011. It's won a host of accolades, including Michelin star within its first year. Is this the restaurant that you would say is closest to your heart?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, you wouldn't want to say that, like, because the other restaurants are not close to your heart. Of course, they all are, but obviously Pollen Street was the first one. You know, the one what myself and Ira gambled everything on. So yeah, absolutely. Of course, it's always going to be close to our heart. But you know, it's you have to have a fixed abode, right? So for me, it was a place where I could anchor myself as a chef, not just a restaurateur. So when I'm in London, I go there first thing in the morning once I've dropped the children at school, and that is my go-to place. I'll prep the fish. I'll check what's going on, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Say hello to all the team. And then, you know, I'll probably run my meetings from the bar area. So I'm just soaking the whole energy of the restaurant up, and then I'll do lunch service there, and then maybe dinner service there, or maybe at Burner's Tavern or City Social. And that's pretty much how I run my life, really. It's pretty much like that. I still run my life as a cook.
So how are you thinking about operations after restaurants reopen?
You know, we don't really still have strong government guidance. You know, apparently yesterday we could open on the 22nd of June, and now they're saying we can't. So, you know, I know the government are acting on sage, but we do need clear guidance, because you can't just go in one day and open the next day. It takes weeks of planning. So the government do need to get their act together on this. And, you know, 2 meter distancing will not work in hospitality. It's impossible. You know, one meter is bad enough, but 2 meter is absolutely unworkable. So until the science says that we can get down to 1 meter, I don't think hospitality will come back anytime soon. So I think they've really got to think about how they're going to get hospitality back to work.
And are all your restaurants safe from closure?
Safe from what, sorry?
Safe from closure.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we hope so. But, you know, in this world, it's moving daily. We don't know. You know, we really don't know. I mean, a lot is with the landlords. A lot is with, you know, how long we can keep furlough going. You know, that runs out at the end of July. A lot of it is dependent on if staff even want to come back, right? A lot of our staff, probably 70%, are based in Greece, Italy, Spain, France. And you know, right now the UK is not looking as attractive as those countries, because they're starting to reopen. Yeah. So it's you know, it's dependent on many, many things. And I think we, again, until the government give us a real plan back to work, we're all in limbo.
And you mentioned your staff earlier on. How are you keeping them positive during this time?
You know, we do like all the smellies are still doing online wine training. So there's a lot of online training going on. The cooks meet a couple of times a week, and we'll maybe get a guest supplier to phone in, and we'll talk about, you know, what's in season, why it's in season, what we can do with it, what we can't do with it, trends, what people are going on around the world, what other chefs are doing. Front of house, same. You know, we're talking about new service techniques, what that 1 meter distance rule will mean, how we're going to get people in and out of toilets safely, how we're going to get them in and out of reception safely. Yeah, that's it, really, pretty much, you know.
And there are a lot of restaurants that have been looking at delivery, takeaway, that kind of dynamic. Are you thinking about that for your businesses, any takeaways?
I mean, we'll do some form of takeaway when we reopen, but it will be more to deliver to offices locally too, as you potentially for the first couple of months might not want to leave their desks. So it will be proper plated dishes, but in a lovely, so it won't be cheap, you know. We're not certainly, you know, we're not certainly going to turn Pollen Street Social into a pizza takeaway. It's not what we do. And it'll be maybe three or four dishes per restaurant. Again, just delivered to the local community in our area, so people don't have to come into a restaurant if they don't want to. And we'll review it on a month by month basis, depending on business levels. But we're not going to start doing delivery and stuff because it's just we don't have the capacity or the click and collect and all that type of stuff to make it work. And you know, every single restaurant in London is now trying to get a piece of that market, and it's saturated already very quickly. You know.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier on the charity that you're supporting because your daughter has diabetes. How has that influenced your cooking style?
Well, it doesn't influence it as the restaurants are concerned, but it makes us more mindful at home. So, you know, we try and but the thing is also, you know, we don't want it to suddenly drastically affect her life because, you know, it's a livable condition. It's a very serious condition, but it's livable. And we just try and teach her good eating habits, which continue for the rest of her life, really. So, you know, because obviously, you know, the less carbohydrates and sugar she puts into her body, the less insulin she has to inject. And so trying to get her to neutralize the balance through eating and having to inject less is also, but at the same time, you know, she's 14, you know, she wants to have a pizza, she wants to have, you know, a bit of pasta, she wants to have this and that, so we allow that, you know. So it's just really being mindful of the condition and working together as a family. Right. But, you know, my wife's fantastic at all that, you know.
And so there's a big move towards vegan or vegetarian options. Is that something that you focus on with your restaurants?
Well, we've been doing that now for the last 2 or 3 years, maybe. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, Pollen Street won best vegan tasting menu from Peter, and at the time everyone thought it was a joke, but you know, we got a lot of customer bases through that award. And you know, a lot of people don't just do it because of dietary, people do it because of lifestyle choices. So we want to show that we could actually execute a menu just as interesting as meat and fish with vegetables, you know.
Yeah.
And it's been a huge success.
I mean, you're a familiar face on our TV screens. Your latest series was The Chef's Brigade. How yeah. did that come about?
So it was basically just, you know, expectations who made it approached myself and Ira to see if we were interested in doing that as a TV series. And, you know, we only ever said we'd go back to doing a TV series if it was about real food, which it was, teaching young people. And then the added bonus of being able to travel around Europe to some of the most amazing food destinations. So what's not to love about it, right? And they were very keen to fit it in around my schedule so we could make it work. And yeah, we just absolutely loved it. You know, it was just one of the highlights of our career to be able to film that. Really, really.
I've been trying to look for it to watch the whole series, and there's only small clips on YouTube. How can someone watch it if they want to?
It's been taken down off iPlayer now, unfortunately. I know expectations are fighting to put it back up during lockdown, but whether BBC will or not, I mean, you know, I'm sure they've got so many other shows that what they've made, they've got a show. But yeah, it's around right now. I think people would love to be taken to a food destination. Yeah, so, you know, it could get a second way, but I don't know. It used to be on iPlayer, but it's not anymore.
All right. Well, fingers crossed, because I really want to watch it. So how do you manage to run a restaurant empire and also manage all your TV work?
I don't do a lot of TV, though. I don't. So it doesn't really interfere with it. I mean, I apart from when we did Chef's Brigade, which... you know, Ira does our diaries, so she's militant with it. You know, she's very good at, she's got a good system going where she plans it for the year, but leaves gaps to be able to fit other stuff in. So when Chef's Brigade came in, she did a bit of juggling around, and then we got it fitted into that autumn. But apart from that, I do a bit of Saturday Kitchen, I do a bit of Sunday brunch, and they're at weekends anyway, and that's it really. I don't really do much else. I've done the odd judging on Great British Menu, and these are like 1 day, 2 day things. So it's no big commitment, you know.
Right. So you come from humble beginnings, and you worked really hard to get to where you are now. Have you achieved everything you wanted, or is there still more to come from Jason?
I think, you know, the important thing for us is just, you know, we've got to get out of, you know, the more serious thing is right in front of us, which is COVID-19, and getting out of where we are right now and getting back into being in business and getting those businesses to survive over the next 2 years. Yeah. So really, to be honest, I'm not really looking anywhere, you know. Yes, a year ago, if you'd have asked me that, I said, yes, you know, we want to continue till we retire and potentially, you know, do a couple more restaurants, you know. But, you know, this has changed everything. So we have no idea. Right now, it's just about survival. It's about getting through the next 2 years, keeping ourselves in business, doing a good job for our customers, and just making sure that, you know, we take care of as many staff as we possibly can and just getting back in the game. And once we've achieved that, then we've got to look at what the future holds. But right now, to sit there and make a plan of saying, I'm going to open 5 more restaurants, do another TV show, do this, do that, I think would be very presumptuous, because there's just too many unknowns, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in normal times, you do lead an incredibly busy life. What do you do to unwind?
You know, it's always family time at the weekends. So we do a lot with the girls. Myself and my wife love to travel what's not work. So, you know, we try and grab a couple of long weekends per year to sort of like unwind and relax and just have a bit of us time. You know, we both work out quite a lot. So that's our sort of stress relief. Yeah, and that's it really, because there's not much else time to do really to him.
Yeah. Well, I hear you love skiing. What's your top ski destination?
Oh, yeah, we do love to ski, actually. That's one of our holidays every year. Yeah, we definitely like to ski. So we always go to Megev. Always, once a year, we definitely go to Megev, and also St. Moritz, because we have a restaurant there. So there are two ski destinations. And what we love about Megev, it's not over touristy. It's just a beautiful little quaint French village. It's quite low down, so you've got to get your mumps right. And we're good friends with the Renau family, who's got a three-star restaurant there. And so we normally stay with those guys and eat in his restaurant. And yeah, it's just become a bit of a family tradition, really. And we just love it there. We just pray that we can go back this year and business is okay.
Yeah. And would you say you're all very well-experienced skiers?
Me and my wife are okay. The kids are getting really good, but we started quite late. So we're okay. We get, you know, the main thing is me and my wife can get to the top of the mountain. We can ski down to the restaurant. We can have a nice glass of wine, a nice bit of lunch, and ski down to the bottom. That's as good as we want to be, really. So yeah, we just enjoy it. We just enjoy as a family being able to ski together and stuff. It's just great fun.
Absolutely. So other than your own, do you have a top restaurant in London that you love to visit?
Yeah, you know, we like to, for fine dining, we love the Ledbury, we love Alain Ducasse, you know, we love Bibendum. You know, if we're gonna have simple food, you know, we love well, not simple food, still amazing food, but we love Sabor. We used to love going to Araki till the chef went back. We recently went to Endo over in White City. We love that for Japanese food. So yeah, I mean, you know, I think in London, it's just, you know, there's so many great restaurants, and I just hope that continues, you know. There's just, you know, I think you struggle to have a bad meal in London now, you know.
So if not a chef, what would you have been?
Oh, it's a tricky one. I don't know, you know. I have no idea. I have no idea, because, you know, it's very, very tricky. I probably would have been... Oh, no idea. I didn't do very well at school, so it wouldn't be anything educational for sure. It's like all kids, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a footballer, but obviously I was never that good at football anyway, so that was never an option. But, you know, I don't know. You know, I love sports, so it would have been nice to do something in sports, probably.
Mm-hmm. Tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Something about myself that you possibly couldn't know. I'm not a very good flyer. So people, oh, really? because I pretty much live on a plane 35% of my time.
Absolutely.
I'm not a very good flyer. I don't, you know, I get very nervous when it gets rocky and bumpy, and, you know, my wife will grab my hand and I'll be all sweaty and stuff. So I'm not a very good flyer, but I just, you know, I have no choice, right?
You have no choice, exactly. And it's surprising because you do travel so much.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you so much for your time, Jason.
And yeah, thank you.
Guys, if you want to follow Jason, he's on Instagram at @_JasonAtherton, and I'm at @PoshNoshGal. Thanks, Jason. Speak to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.